you have to encourage the rich by giving them more so that they will come to Finland and stay in Finland and make us prosper. But when it comes to the poor, the strategy is just the opposite. You take away even the little that they have to motivate them. Isn't that strange?
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
My name is Kaarina Kailo. I'm from Finland, and I'm an independent scholar right now, but I have been a women's studies professor, and now I'm very much involved in grassroots activities, as well as the Left Alliance, as coordinator of women's issues.
All right, Kaarina, Finland is quite famous for promoting itself as the country that understood that social safety net really pays off. I mean, I've seen so many exhibits from Finland, but I understand from you that things are changing.
Oh dear, things are changing rapidly and in a devastating way. I think that we are really now suffering from this predatory hypocrisy. You know, the corporations are taking over everywhere in the world, and whether it's Scandinavia or North America or Europe, you know, it's the same forces that are trying to undo the hundreds of years of progressive work that women's groups and left groups have done. And the sad thing is that a lot of women don't seem to understand what's hit them.
So give me an example to start.
Well, the welfare state is held to be sacred by the Finns, also a lot of Swedes and Danish and other Scandinavian people. In some studies, 85% of the Finns want to retain it and are willing to pay taxes to have universal health care, universal education, elderly care, and so on. But already now, since the 70s, but in a sharp way since the 1990s right-wing government, the welfare state has been outsourced and reduced to, if not a bare minimum, close to a bare minimum. So we have lost a lot of the things that made it possible for women to be equal in society, equal to men in terms of rights. And, you know, we still have daycare centers, we still have you know, what it takes for women to be able to go to work. But the attitude is changing. The rich are getting richer, the poor are getting poorer. We have new divisions which are not really openly discussed and admitted. And all the institutions or companies that have been paid by Finnish taxpayers, like the electrical companies and the telephone, they've been privatized. And that means that the prices have gone way up in terms of the basic gifts that we need to survive. And just to give you an example, the Fortum Electricity Energy Company, the head of this corporation, makes more money than the whole budget of the Finnish government for mental health care. One person, he's super rich because he has practically a monopoly, and they are giving these huge boosts to corporate executives. I mean, it's the same argument everywhere, that somehow this is the weird thing, that you have to encourage the rich by giving them more so that they will come to Finland and stay in Finland and make us prosper. But when it comes to motivating and encouraging the poor, the strategy is just the opposite. You take away even the little that they have to motivate them. Isn't that strange? So there's two sets of criteria for the rich and the poor. So that means that the unemployed, who are, you know, most of them, definitely, if not all, unemployed by no fault of their own. You know, the corporations are outsourcing, sacking a lot of people. Then they are told that they have to practically accept any job, just, you know, so that nobody's unemployed. But they're the ones who would need some extras to make a decent living. You know, women are among this group to a great extent. So there's a new language of equality. Equality now refers to the rights of the rich, the men, the corporations. When you talk about giving public subsidies, in the old days, the subsidies, in a way, would go to those in need. Women's shelters, fields like humanities, which can't have corporate funding, women's groups, and so on. Now the subsidies go to those who already have, who don't need subsidies. So Nokia is the biggest company in Finland, and probably it's an internationally major corporation. And they have the highest amount of subsidies given by the Finnish taxpayers. And that money goes out of Finland, it doesn't stay in Finland. And this affects the healthcare, it affects everything. Also, one thing that's very common in Finland now is that they are reducing the number of municipalities, and I think that's happening in Canada and elsewhere from what I understand. And the idea is that we need more efficiency, more competitiveness, more productivity. So local government and local municipalities are replaced by these mega systems, you know, like they have kind of regional municipal councils. And all of this has led to women losing a lot of their positions in politics, because the coalition type bodies consist mostly of heads of the different municipalities, and they're mostly men. So gender equality has experienced a major backlash in terms of political representation and women's employment and the services. For instance, women are 85% of the workforce in the public sector, in education, healthcare, you know, those kinds of areas. And now they are downsizing all of those areas and getting rid of a lot of the staff. And sometimes private companies are rehiring them, but at smaller benefits and weaker salaries and so on. So there's a huge transfer flow of money from the European Union through Finland to the male-dominated fields of technology, IT, communications, economy, at the expense of all of the women-dominated fields, humanities, education, both in the academic world and in terms of the public sector. And women are forced to carry the risks of entrepreneurship. So where they used to have a decent salary as teachers or, you know, social workers or whatever, now they're compelled to open small businesses and to offer their services in a competitive way with each other. And that has not solved their problem at all, because in fact what's happening is the big corporations, Sodexo and, you know, all of those kinds of multinationals, they are coming to these newly open big markets, you know, where the small municipalities used to be. And so they come to offer services that were formerly offered by the local municipality, the public sector. And of course they hire people, you know, they pay less, they want to make more profit, and the prices go up, and often they corner the market. So the small women entrepreneurs are out of business completely, and they don't even get any benefits from welfare because they have been turned into entrepreneurs. So that's another plot to get more people off the dependency on the safety system. And there's a lot of manipulation going on where a lot of these women don't know what the implications are.
So I want to ask you about how the women's movement is responding to this, but first I want to ask you about the relationship to the European Union.
Well, Finland is considered the model pupil of the European Union, much to my regret, because that means that the representatives from Finland, although they consist of members of different parties, and I find some of the Left Alliance people and the Green Party people are doing their best to withstand the worst developments. But in totality, because of the fact that the center party and the right wing, Kokoomus, it's the national coalition, because they're the ones who are in power, they are very keen to accept and to embrace these neoliberal politics that are coming from the European Union. And it's amazing, but Finland has been among the first to apply the kinds of directives that other countries have protested against, which are found to be really, you know, the exchange economy against the gift economy. So very crude, barbarous policies, politics, to replace the welfare state with this corporate predatory kind of model, the new public management and so on. Finland has been among the first and the most keen to put them into practice. For instance, this law about nothing must impede corporate competitive rights. Finland has been very good at adopting unfair taxation and other kinds of laws and systems which benefit the business at the expense of people. For instance, if you think of women's shelters, you don't think of them as mainly productive. I mean, it's a ridiculous idea that they should be productive and make profits. But there is a kind of mantra that they repeat everywhere in the main news media and everywhere, that we can't afford any more kind of looking after people and always supporting people. People have to become the masters of their own fate. This kind of everyone for himself, this kind of an ethos is everywhere now. And so they say that even associations have to try to become productive, that we cannot afford to have the third sector unproductive. And I don't know, how is it possible that the decision makers don't get it? But how do you make money out of a woman's shelter? Do you put more women into one room? Do you put, you know, barracks like 10 beds on top of each other to make it more productive? I mean, obviously it's a service, it's not a commodity, it's not a product. But this predatory, corporocratic kind of thinking has so invaded everything that it seems like there's no ability to even understand that not everything can make profit. But anyway, in Seinäjoki, in one Finnish town, the women's shelter was suspended because it could not apply these kinds of models of productivity. Somehow the municipalities, they purchase services, but I mean, if it's unoccupied, let's say that for 2 months you don't have customers, which is a great thing, of course. We don't want people depending on women's shelters. But then it's not worth having employees in it, or services, or telephone lines, because it's empty buildings. But what if all of a sudden you have 10 women who desperately need help? You can't start the whole service in 1 or 2 days. You have to allow for quiet periods. But with this mad corporate thinking of productivity, these kinds of services are being lost.
I heard you say something earlier about suppression of volunteer activities by the government in Finland, and I want you to explain that, please, to the listeners.
Well, for instance, there are sports associations that, you know, want to build centers for the young, or religious people who want to start a community building or something like that. And so these work bees, which used to be a very central aspect of communal living, are now seen to distort business.
Wait, let's say what work bees are a little more.
Work bees are collectives of, well, just a group of people who decide that they want to give freely of their knowledge and their skills, so as to build a house or build a center. You know, somebody could renovate, somebody could do something else. Well, now this is not in all cases possible anymore, because the business world feels that this is depriving them of opportunities for profit making. So if too many people were volunteering their services, you know, it reduces their business, and this is leading now to new legislation, taxation of the work, the freely done work. And I'm not sure exactly of the details, but I just know, for instance, my husband used to belong to this football veterans League, you know, they would do moving. They would move people's homes with much less money than the big corporations. And this was part of their sort of social activism. And at the same time, they would gather money for their own activities, training young boys to do football or whatever. They're not doing it anymore because it's not worth it somehow, because of they are looked upon as kind of a business. So the status, there's no more distinction made between, a clear distinction being made between work bees and business. So as soon as there's an element of business, and this comes from the European Union, as soon as you can define something as being business-like activity, then the tax people flow in and make it very difficult. There's been a lot of talk that the third sector, for instance, you know, peer groups, associations, migrant women's groups, whatever, now they have to have official accredited auditors to make the reports annually. And now, up till now, it's been done informally because there's not much money circulating in these sort of voluntary organizations. So if that law now comes to pass, it means a lot of associations will simply go under because they can't afford to pay, you know, official auditors. It could be that their small budgets are just enough to cover the rent of a small space. So now all of that money would go to the auditors. And so today, consultants and business-oriented people are the ones who are making all the money because of these new arrangements. So the corporate world has really found very innovative new ways of imperialistically extending their activities into all realms of human life. And, you know, in terms of the gift economy and the exchange economy, it means that this kind of exchange economy that is not based on unilateral love-based giving, but which is always with the idea of profit, is eating up, predating on the gift economy, which has been based on giving value to the other, to the community, of creating social networks, bonding. All of the positive aspects of community creation are now being threatened. And it's just like what happened with the potlatch. It was forbidden in Canada because it was a threat to capitalism that some nations would be giving away their property freely in order to ensure social harmony and balance, and the idea that nobody would accumulate a lot of property. So now the welfare state is being reduced, or there's an effort to completely get rid of it and to replace both democracy and the welfare state with this corporate rule where the corporations are the ones with all the rights.
All right. Now, I would like to ask you about the women's movement in Finland specifically. What's happening with it, and how are you responding?
The women's movement. I'm going to get into trouble in Finland when I say this, but I don't think we really have a very strong women's movement. The women's studies in Finland, as opposed to Canada, for instance, is very academic, and I think it's co-opted. Very abstract. There's a lot of focus on queer politics, on representations, postmodernism, all of which is fine. I mean, I find it's all very important and exciting, but the grassroots connection is missing, in my opinion. There's a lot more connection with European Union-funded projects, which on the surface seem to be promoting equality and a lot of positive things, best practices, equal opportunities. But I think they are poisonous gifts from the European Union because they aim mostly at incorporating women and feminists into the market economy on its terms and watering down this gifting impulse in humans, not only in women, but in all of society. And I have seen a lot of activists and former left-type people get sucked into collaboration only with these European Union gender equality projects, which are not bringing about social change. So the grassroots women's movement, there is the NYTKIS, there's the women's associations in collaboration that's passing statements and doing campaigns. So that's, of course, important, but when I compare it to what was going on in Canada, I think it's still a little bit elite. And I don't think that there's a real movement to help the women who are suffering the most from the corporate globalization. The Women's Alliance, which I belong to now, of course I chose them because I feel that the women in that political party is doing the most for the most vulnerable women. All parties on one level are, I think, now a little bit on the right, more than in the past. So I'm not quite happy even in my with my own party, because I think a lot of the men are doing too many compromises with this globalization discourse. But given that, you know, we don't have a women's party, this is the best forum for me to be part of the women's movement. For instance, we have a strong ties with the European Left Forum. So we meet in different parts of Europe and try to find solutions to this global problem, because of course Finland's problems are not separate from the European problems, and you know, it would be useless to focus only on Finland and not look at the global picture. So I guess the women's movement has gone global, and this Feminist for the Gift Economy is my women's movement, much more than some Finnish organization. But then I don't want to give the wrong impression. I mean, in Oulu, for instance, we have these migrant women's associations that I have been co-founding. So we are trying to do all kinds of new things to take into account that we have new population structures in Finland, and we have a lot of these vulnerable women who are brought from Thailand and East Europe to Finland to service the men in Finland. So there's new needs for the women's movement, and maybe women's movement consists of all of these little groups that are trying to do something locally, dealing with immediate specific problems. Yeah. I think with globalization and the opening of the borders, the free trade, all of that, not only has sex trafficking increased, multiplied vastly compared to, let's say, 20 years ago, but other kinds of purchasing of women as commodities. I mean, sex trade is the obvious negative effect of the fact that Russia, for instance, doesn't have a good safety network anymore, that they don't have enough work for women, and you know, the means of survival have been reduced. So women are pushed into prostitution or lured into prostitution against their better knowledge. So there's that phenomenon. But then there's also, this is a new phenomenon, that particularly in the countryside where there are a lot of bachelors, it's a known fact that there are more lonely men in the remote regions than women, because the women tend to be more educated and they flow into the urban centers. So a lot of the men are left behind. So they try to balance out by then, you know, getting these mail order brides. But there's been gossip, you know, the kind of reliable women's network knowledge, that there's a lot of women who are locked up in these homes. Of course, not all men are monsters, but there are some men who are really monsters, who are using these more docile, obedient type women as sex slaves or domestic slaves. They are not treated as partners. And we don't know how many there are. How do we find out? But I think even the fact that we have the intuition or some inkling that this could be a problem, it necessitates that we do something about it, because it's just a horrible fate that you don't speak the language of the country, that your passport might be taken away, you don't get access to language classes. So, I mean, it's slavery. I mean, we have all kinds of new forms of slavery today that need to be talked about.
So what about women in other countries and other regions of the world, or people in other countries, other regions of the world? Is there something that we can do? Should we send letters to Nokia? What should we do?
Well, there's so much we should do and could do. I don't know even where to start. I mean, I do so much activism on so many levels. I think that everybody has to find their own thing. You know, I have been working with indigenous people, with recovering the gift economies, the values that go with gift economies, and a more sane and and responsible attitude towards the environment. And I work on violence against women from the point of view that it's not a just a gender thing, but it's the fact that we live in a violent culture that brings out the worst in both men and women, although women are more the victims of it. So I write, I recover mythologies, I call it eco-mythologies, which means that we have a lot of literature and mythology in the world that describes the interconnections and the interdependencies of the human and animal world. And I think that we need those as new tools of socialization to bring long-term effects, new values through the way we educate children, and that we get rid of all these violent epics and, you know, warlike nationalistic epics. But that's my choice. There's a lot of other things people can do on a global level. I mean, writing to Nokia, I hadn't thought of that.
There's certainly a lot of Nokia users around the world.
Well, I think Nokia did a really crummy thing in Germany. They left a lot of people unemployed because they moved their operation to, I think it was Romania, because it was cheaper there. And they had been given a lot of local subsidies. So this created an outrage. And a lot of German people said they will never, ever buy a Nokia phone anymore. So I think consumers do have some clout. Mm-hmm. And Nokia ended up having to pay back some of the subsidies. So I think people can operate on many levels to protest this kind of predatory corporate thinking and action.
Just last question, though, about your book, because I understand you have a book about to come out from Inanna Press. Would you just say something briefly about your book?
Well, it's about the bear and the woman. It's really stories about eco-mythologies from different northern cultures. The book has academic articles, poetry, fiction, emails from people who have gone to live with the bears in a conscious attempt to transgress these conventions that we have. History is different from stories, you know, these hierarchies between the genres. So I mix all the different kinds of genres about this one theme with the aim of revealing that there have been worldviews that were much more sane and eco-friendly, woman-friendly than the one that we live in, and that there is quite a big difference between indigenous ideas about storytelling and mythologies and the Western very commodified way of looking at things, where now books are more or less commodities, and the kind of stories that were meant to transmit ancestral laws, ancestral traditions and values are now considered more like children's books. So adults don't need that eco-friendly knowledge.
And the title of the book?
Women and Bears, Gender, Nature and Culture Revisited.
By Karina Kylo. Thank you, Karina, for this great interview. Reporting for Wings, I'm Frieda Worden. To hear Wings programs again, visit the archive section of the website www.wings.org. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.